Today, we're talking with the inspiring and bubbly Karen McBride, the Citizenship Manager, aka Volunteer Manager, of the amazing Woodfordia, organisers of the Woodford Folk Festival, the Planning Festival, and Festival of Small Halls. The annual Woodford Folk Festival is the largest of the three events, which requires a small army of over 2,700 volunteers. That includes 150 department heads and an organisational structure that will blow your mind. The Woodford program features concerts, dance, street theatre, writers' panels, film festival, comedy sessions, acoustic jams, social dialogue and debate, folk medicine, an entire children's festival, an environmental program featuring talks, debates and films, art and craft workshops, circus performances and workshops, late night cabarets, parades and special events, including a spectacular firework. Karen talks to us about the Woodfordia philosophy of empowerment and gratitude, the innovative volunteer software they've created called Venus, and how she ensures supreme efficiencies in everything they do by having robust systems and good tools. Karen's number one tip in recruiting and retaining volunteers is make them love you. Now let's chat to Karen. One of the biggest things that I always hear, and you've probably heard this as well, is this struggle to attract and retain volunteers. And yeah. Woodford comes up all the time. You know, it's the, you know, holy grail of how you do volunteers. So no pressure.
And it's quite a compliment. I don't know if it's warranted, but, you know, we try.
Yeah. And that's, I guess, why I wanted to talk to you today is really about, you know, being able to share what you do at Woodford and whether or not there's some key learnings in that for other festivals and events. And I know, look, every festival's quite different in everything that they do. So sure, it's not necessarily a cookie cutter approach to, you know, how you do it and how others could do that. But I think it'd be great to understand how you've got to where you are and whether there is, you know, any little takeaways there for other festivals and events.
Sure, sure. I haven't been with the festival the whole time. You may have picked up I have an accent. I came from Canada and back in 2003. So I have been here for some years now, 15, I guess. Whoa. But I can't speak to how they got going in the beginning days, the early days. I've heard about the early days where it was a lot smaller group of people, like the organizing group was, you know, just 50 or 60 people. And but I think that one of the foundational things that makes it work is that divulging and empowering, like spreading the responsibility out as far as you can and including more people and empowering them to run their little areas. We've broken down our festival into departments and we have department heads and they choose their volunteers and they run their department and they organize their logistics and infrastructure and they're given that full responsibility of running that department, which then, I guess, reduces their overall workload because they're not trying to do everything. They're just focusing on one aspect and it can help with burnout. I think with, you know, you find you get these core people that do everything and wear all the hats and maybe they need to learn how to separate their jobs out and delegate to others to bring more people in and say, like, here's a small thing you can do. You can take care of the transportation, or you could take care of parking, you could take care of the info booth, or, you know, just breaking it down into little bits and then having a very clear goal of what that department has to do for the overall event. It's the only way I'm sane, because I could never do 3,000 volunteers myself. You know, I've got 150 department heads. We'll get probably up to 155, 158 once we fill all the vacancies. But yeah, they are the people that actually are doing all of the volunteer management. So I support them. My role is the department heads manager. I oversee the whole volunteer management system, but we've developed our own software called Venus. It's completely decentralizing the way we manage our volunteers. So when a volunteer applies for a position, the application goes directly to the manager and they screen that person. They check their availability, suitability, and then they accept them or not. And then they're responsible for taking care of that person from the get-go. Like, I really have very little contact with the 2,700 volunteers. I'm mainly more focused on the 155 department heads and the 150 key offsiders. But again, even the department heads are responsible for finding their own key offsiders. So there's always kind of two people at least running a department, and they share that responsibility on the ground of managing it. But there's ultimately one person that's overall responsible for that department. So that is probably how it works. And that system that we've developed it over since 2005. So I've been part of the full development process of like how to manage volunteers from an efficiency perspective. You know, when I came as a backpacker in 2003, I could see they were doing it exactly like I was doing it at the festival in Canada, which was, you know, Excel spreadsheets, trying to get names to put them in the Gates database, and last minute calling around to try and fill gaps and whatnot. And it was pretty chaotic. And at that time they had 1,800 volunteers. So they were like, we need to develop a system that's going to work for us. And they already had the department system. So the software system was developed to match that sort of ethos of let's break it down, small departments, positions, and sort of divest and spread that responsibility across all of them. They have to choose their volunteers, which empowers them. They are then excited. Like right now we're in that recruitment phase and they're all calling back returning volunteers. And, you know, October 1st, we'll start new volunteer applications come in, and that's a whole other kettle of fish because they don't know the festival maybe. And so there's more screening to go in on that. But I think the screening of the volunteers is the key part of it. So we do really thorough assessments of our needs. We develop really detailed position descriptions that include the duties of the job, the specific requirements. Like if it's a driving job, you have to be 25 and have a valid driver's license. And if you're working with the small children, you need to have a blue card. And then the personal attributes of the person that we're looking for, we include the training dates and times, comments about the roster, like if it's five-hour shifts or double shifts or split shifts. And so when they apply, they really know exactly what they're signing up for, which I think is crucial. Like if a volunteer shows up for a position or a shift and it's not what they thought it was, they're quite likely to not enjoy it. There's a great possibility that they're not going to be suited for it. So what we do our best to make sure our descriptions are accurate and 100% honest. And we probably go overboard a bit on, you know, describing it as more difficult than it really is so that they are ready for that. And then when they show up and it's not that bad, they're like, oh, this is a lot of fun. You know,
I think that's a key point. You know, that
under promise and over deliver is sort of how we do the festival in general. But the same thing with the recruitment of volunteers, like we don't pretend that it's going to be easy, you know, especially like our build crew. It's like, this is long, hard. You're working in hot summer, dusty conditions, could be wet and muddy. You're going to live on site in really basic amenities. Like it's not great. You know, we try our best, but like it's chaos a lot of the times. So we don't sell it as like smooth sailing. This is like come and join the rocky ship, basically.
Yeah. So how did that, Karen, I'm interested. So you say from about 2005, is that when they introduced the software system, or that's when all of this change happened?
No, it's when we introduced the software. The structure was already in place. Like Bill, the director, had that in mind from the get-go. He was always finding people, taking them and going, this is your responsibility now, and empowering people to take it on. And so that kind of just, like I said, breaking it down and saying, I need you to run the children's festival. It's yours. Come to me if you need me. You know, let's talk about what it looks like. You understand what you need to do, and now go. You know, and that's how he treated me when I got there. It was like, okay, you run the volunteers program. Come to me if you need me. You know, the goal is get the volunteers in, make them happy, make sure everyone's happy, and then hopefully they come back again. So
what I'm trying to understand is that transition phase. You know, you talked about, you know, when you got there and there was somewhat chaos, you know, in terms of that volunteer management process. And that's what we see with most of the events that I work with. It's you exactly described it. You know, it's this chaotic approach to, oh my God, ring as many friends as you can. We need another 10 people. You know, we Joe Bloggs didn't turn up, or, you know, 10 people didn't turn up, and then on the day it becomes crazy because you're shuffling people around. It's tough, and that becomes such a big job on its own. Mm-hmm. Like, how did that transition happen from that into the new one? And was it hard or?
Well, I think there's always been, like, the volunteers get a ticket. And in the early days, they bought their ticket to the festival. They didn't get a free ticket. So there was a really core foundation of, we're giving to this because we believe in it. We believe in it so much, we're going to give our time and energy and also buy a ticket. And it became, like, for the first, I think, 10 years they did that. It was before my time, but I know about the folklore of Woodfordia, and that built a foundation. Like, of course we're going to give to this. We love it. This is our hobby. This is our passion. This is something we believe in, and we want to make it work. So that still is an underlying spirit of the festival. It's like, it's built on giving, you know, like, we think it's a privilege to give to it. So when someone is asked to do something, the first thought isn't, how can we reward you for doing this? It is, thank you for making this all work. It's the gratitude and the respect. But if you get caught up in the, we must reward you for every single thing you do, you're only going to get people that are doing it for the reward, as opposed to seeing the intrinsic reward of being a part of it. Our volunteers do it. The main reason they do it is because they want to be a part of it. You know, we do a survey and ask that, and resoundingly, they just, because they want to be a part of this amazing festival that they love. So I think I tell my department heads, take care of them. You know, we have a kind of a service model approach as opposed to a top-down hierarchy. I can share with you our organizational chart and just show you what it looks like. Actually, maybe I'll send that now so that you can see it.
That'd be great.
It's a little bit mind-blowing. Everyone goes, whoa, that's your organizational chart. It's a bit different to what most organizations structure their charts at. Our idea is that our volunteers are serving our patrons and performers. So there's, when you get the image, there's an outer ring, the yellow, and that symbolizes the people that we serve. The volunteers are all the little boxes are on the outside. And then the next ring in is our, like, organizers, our department heads and key offsiders. And their role is to serve the volunteers, to make sure that they're having a good time, that they've got the training they need, the encouragement, the support. You know, I tell my department heads to, the best way to keep your volunteers is to make them love you. So you do things for them, you know, you tell them jokes, you tell them they're doing a great job. You know, I'm not opposed to bribery with lollies, but I'm not a fan of lollies, but, you know, some people, like, they'll go out and have a stash in their pocket and go around and be like, are you okay? Do you want a lolly? You know, like, oh, that's something cool. That just makes, you know, or making sure they carry a little spray bottle, because we're obviously in the Queensland summer and it's quite hot. So, you know, make sure, cool your volleys down and give them something like, are you okay? Do you need to take a break? Like, making sure that they're well cared for is what our department heads are, you know, like, sort of asked to do. And my job is to serve the department heads to make sure that they have all the tools they need. You know, the system works. I respond to their questions as quickly as possible. Like, you know, volleys in, like, my inbox is exploding, but I certainly prioritize my organizers to get them so that they're not waiting for me for an answer so that they can continue with their job. So I try to respond to them within a day. Volunteers, they might have to wait up to a week because there's a lot of them.
I've just opened that wheel of people.
Sometimes I call it the wheel of doom, and other times it's the Woodfordia mandala when I'm feeling like in the hippie phase.
Wow.
Yeah. And so then our executive, Bill and Amanda, the director and the general manager, their job is to serve us. And basically, like, I know I can go to them if I need help, but they're really hands off, not micromanaging. And that's a tough thing for people who are in management roles, is to empower and trust and step back, you know, give them the responsibility and then not micromanage them. See that micromanaging is, it's your downfall, because you're not giving that person the chance to shine. And so it's about your core people, I think, is a really key thing, is getting them to know, okay, I'm going to get this person to do this and give them the responsibility, and they can find that group and make it fun. You know, like, that's the other thing, is that we try and add humor into everything. We don't get everything right. We have a lot of mistakes, and we're very upfront about our mistakes. It's a complex beast, as you can see. So...
Wow. That is very complex. I've never seen anything like it. That's impressive.
So I get to make that up every year because every year we tweak and change.
What about the recruitment phase? Do you have to recruit many department heads or volunteers here? And is there a standard process that you go through?
We have a fairly high return rate with our organizers. Like in a bad year, I might have 30, 35 new department heads. Like I've had one year I had up to 38 new ones, and it just seemed to be a year of turnover where there was quite a few of the sort of the old guard all saying at the same time, gonna retire.
Yeah.
Mixed with people having babies or jobs, travel, you know, that happens. But yeah, we try with anyone who's stepping down to help us to find their successor. You know, our mentoring and succession planning is not the best. That's something that I would like to improve on. Like when a department head knows that they're going to probably not be there next year to talk to me first, and that we can talk about looking for someone together and then possibly mentoring them through the festival. And some department heads are really good at it and do that. They're not going to leave their position until they know they're going to hand the hat to someone that's going to take care of it. Like they feel that ownership over their department, so they don't want to walk away. Some others, you know, maybe haven't done it for long enough and don't have the same, like they just, or it's sudden, like they're like, I just got a job and I got transferred to Argentina. It's like, okay, you got to go, and that's too bad. So sometimes it's a scramble. Like I've got vacancies right now in my department head positions, and you know, I look first to someone who's was in the crew and who has got flagged as having leadership potential. I think that's another part of the recruitment or the whole volunteer management process is like, it's from low to go. Like after the festival, we do evaluations on all of them through the software. So we know who to reinvite, who maybe wasn't suited for that role, but did the job, like did their hours, but it wasn't the right fit. And then there's that teeny tiny, tiny number of people that are the do not reinvites, we call them. And they, that like last year there was 38. So it's less than 2%. it's like around 1.2% that don't fulfill their commitment or do something illegal or dangerous. And we just don't think that they're right to volunteer for us. Sometimes it's a permanent ban. Sometimes it's a 1 or 2 or 3 year, and they can have a break and then maybe come back. They're remorseful and understanding what they did wrong. I'm kind of maybe, my downfall is maybe a bit too forgiving, but I think, you know, everyone can make mistakes and, you know, still come back and be a better person for it. I make heaps of them. So I'm still here. Someone's still forgiving of me and mine. But keeping track of that is really important. Like,
yeah.
And so our role histories, like they now go back to 2005-06. So I can look and see someone, all the times they volunteered, where they volunteered and what the comments were about them. And so that helps our recruitment when they apply again and they use their returning codes, that manager will see their application and their role history. So they can say, oh, this person's a good volunteer. Great. Mm. So we're continuing to breed the good ones and to weed the not so good ones out. So too, with the position descriptions, because they're so detailed and accurate, and I work really hard with the department heads sort of in August time before we launch to try and get them to update them, to make sure they're accurate and correct with the dates and times and descriptions. People know what they're getting into. And when they do their screening and they make sure that that person is who they say they are, you know, they get a good match and a good fit. And like 85% last year were reinvited to this department. Mm-hmm. So there was only 13% that weren't quite suited for that role. You know, they were working outdoors and they're fair skinned and couldn't handle the heat, or they weren't good with numbers and they applied for a reconciler position or something, or maybe they got placed in it when that was all that was left.
I can't help but think, so as I'm listening to you, I can't help but think you've got such a good system in place. You've built software. Has there ever been any consideration of, you know, providing that to other events to use? Almost to me sounds like a business opportunity. Like I just go, you've put so much effort into it and there's a really good system there. My God, I mean, there's so many events that
yes,
so
indeed.
Much from that.
Yep, it's going to sound weird after 13 years, but it's still in development because we can only afford to do so many tweaks and improvements. It's not at a level yet where I think, like, you know, you the minute you go to try and sell it to someone, they'll be like, "Well, can it do this?" And it's like, we don't have the capacity to respond to provide the tech support. Like, yes, it is a business opportunity, and we have certainly talked about it. I always joke with Bill saying, you know, please send me around the world and I will sell Venus to every festival in the world and we could make a lot of money. But the reality is that we're not in the software business. We're in the festival and events business. And yes, it's a business opportunity that we always have in the back of our mind might be something where we sell subscriptions to it, but we'll have to have a dedicated person to be doing tech support and the training. And my job is already quite big and there could be the opportunity for that, but it's what can we do first? Do we get people who want to subscribe and then we have to scramble to get the support in place? Our website developer, like the software developer, has just like recently had a kid and is trying to move towards freelancing. He's no longer full-time staff with us, so we don't have him all the time. That's just part of his life and his choices that he's made. And it's, you know, it's just one of those things. It's like, so now we have to limit what we can do with it because we have to pay him by the hour. It's not a, like, hey, you're a staff, you have to do this. It's everything is a quotable job.
And, yeah, yeah.
As a not-for-profit, I mean, we look big and huge, but we're just like every other event. We're still scrounging for money and trying to stretch every dollar into 10. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
We have more dollars, but we also have more bills.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I get that. Income lines and this many expenditure lines.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I know, I just, you know, it wasn't specifically one of my questions for you, but I just thought as you're talking, you've got it.
Oh, yeah.
You've got it there.
It's a very strong tool for sure, but yeah. It would be something that requires a dedicated IT person to be on staff and on hand for all of the little things, like, you know, why isn't this working properly? Or, you know, it works really well, but it's something like technology updates and browsers update and servers update their software. And then everything has to be fixed again because it kind of breaks, you know, it's like the way they talk to each other, you know, or if our server provider in Sydney that houses it does a software update on their end of their server, all of a sudden it's not working right for us. And we're like, what's going on? Why is it? It's a really good, strong tool, but it has to keep being updated and cared for like a car, you know, like it.
Yeah.
And yeah, at this point, we just don't have that person on staff that has the capacity for that. So
yeah.
It's a wish list item for sure. And we've talked about it and it's definitely, you know, we were considering at one point, we had a department head who then went and started working for the Flower Festival in Toowoomba. And we were going to do a subscription with her and see what it was like, because she already knew the front end of it. She would be in a position where she could train her department heads in a sense, having been a department head for us and used that sort of the department head admin end. There's the front end, which the volunteers see on the website. There's the department head end where they log into a site and see applications and screen in place. And they have all their tools for volunteer management. And then there's the back end, which is my end. And I still haven't written my manual. There's just never enough time in the day. And I'm hoping that, and like every year I say I got a new volunteer coordinator. Well, not every year do I get a new one, but that one of the things that she does is help me to write the manual as I train her. It's like, okay, now go away and write that up. I'm going to show you how this works. Now go away and write that into a manual, a chapter.
Yeah, all that stuff that just gets pushed aside.
Just never
pushed
happens.
Aside. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I had last year's volunteer coordinator was so gung-ho about it, and she started, and yeah, she got maybe 10% in. It was like, that's it, eh? Oh, well, once again, I'm not able to delegate. Yep.
So you're obviously doing an amazing job with volunteer management. You have a good system in place. That's really obvious. And as I said to you at the start, whenever I'm at event conferences or just meetings with event people, Woodford always comes up, you know, as the idol in a volunteering point of view. But do you still have some struggles with volunteer management? Are you, like, what are the key struggles that you have from a volunteer management point of view, and how do you deal with those?
I think one of the things that we've noticed that's come up in the last few years that is a very time-consuming issue is people with mental health issues and trying to be accessible and open to all. Like, I still have a very strong philosophy of, like, there's a place for everyone, and even people who have mental health issues, like, if we can work with them, but to a certain level. Like, obviously, it's an intense festival, and volunteering is fun, but it can also be quite stressful, and it could exacerbate someone's anxiety, say, if they have that, you know. So we've, and also I think nowadays it's more prevalent in society in general, and I'm thinking in rural regional Australia, you know, you hear about people struggling with the drought, and there's a lot of stresses in farmland, and I would imagine that mental health issues could be something that would be a problem there too. We're developing our mental health management plan because of the situations that have come up. We've had some more extreme circumstances where people haven't coped well, and it hasn't been managed well on our end either. So we still struggle with how to do that well, and with our, you know, the Woodford compassion that we hold. It's and, you know, finding that line where we say, you actually have to go, we can't have you as a volunteer, is really hard. And then if you get to that point, ensuring that there's a transition, that they're cared for beyond our gates, because we can't just drop them off at the gate and say, you're done, we can't take you because you're not coping. We've created a mental health statement in the application form that we ask people to tell us their conditions, if they have any medications they're on. We say that, you know, while we want to be accessible to all and work with people, we need to know if you have any mental health issues and what you're doing to manage them. And you should probably already have a mental health care plan, and we need to know about it. We need you to talk to our doctor and get your doctor or your team of mental health service providers. Like, they might have a psychologist, a psychiatrist, a GP, you know, they may have a team of people that are supporting them. And our team of people need to know, because there's a difference between what's going on in the real world and what goes on at the festival. There's a lot more temptation to go off your meds, for example, because you want to drink and party and you feel safe in this wonderful, beautiful environment. So trying to get people to stick to a mental health care plan and support them through that is one of the things that we realize is really important. And in fact, this year we're introducing having a psych nurse during the build period, just because I don't have the capacity to follow it through properly. I've got to oversee. During the build, we have 450 volunteers on site and 70 department heads working. And it's a pretty intense period for 3 weeks there before the festival and everyone's building it. So if, you know, we have someone who has a breakdown, I, as much as I'd love to be that person to make sure that they get the care they need and take them, you know, to the doctor, to the psychiatrist, I cannot do it. I can't, you know, I can't afford to spend 8 hours in a day with somebody who's not coping. So we're going to bring someone in who has those skills. She's a long-time Woodford volunteer, and we're going to try, and it's about saving me as well, because it's really emotionally taxing and really difficult to deal with that. I would say, you know, that's the first thing that pops to mind as a struggle is to...
That's really interesting. It actually makes me think of risk management as well, you know, and that's a really interesting, I guess, risk associated with the place we're in at the moment. You know,
well, you know, I mean, 20% of people have mental health issues, and we bring 3,000 volunteers and organizers together, you know, like, do the math. That's a lot. That's a lot of potential for people to not cope well. And so, you know, we have to know that they're taking care of themselves, and we have to know our own limitations. We did do mental health first aid training with our core staff that deal with lots of volunteers and department heads. Like, we have some area managers that oversee 6 or 7 different teams that constitute maybe 200, 250 volunteers. So they were given the training, like, you need it so that you can be of support to and step in. And it, I mean, for mental health first aid is not giving people diagnosis or proper treatment. It's just knowing what to recognize and then getting them to, trying to encourage them to get support. You know, go see a doctor. Do you want me to take you? You know, like, do you have someone who could take you to the doctor? Did you go to the doctor? How was your doctor visit? That kind of stuff. So we did that last year with 15 of our core people, and we're hoping to do it again. Got knocked back for a grant, unfortunately, so
Oh, bugger.
Find another way to make it happen. But yeah, we do have also have one of our long-term patrons who's the head of psychiatry at RBH, and he's been helpful for providing us with support as well. And, you know, I mean, last year we also had, there was a car accident just outside our gates and a young fella died. It was a motorcycle accident. And a lot of our crew witnessed it. So there was this post-traumatic stress that we had to deal with. And we got in a counselor and did the group sessions and did what we could. And I think a crew bounced back. There was definitely some people really shaken because they'd never seen anyone die before. It was pretty gruesome.
Wow. Yeah. And when you're talking about, these are all things, you know, that have never come up in most of the events that I talk with. And I think that's because, you know, they're talking more about, you know, a few hundred volunteers. But when you talk about, you know, a few thousand volunteers, it's a large number of people to manage, you know, and all of these other things that you have to take into consideration. It's huge. Yeah. You're full time with the festival?
Oh yeah. Yeah, full time. Yeah. Yeah. We do two events. We have the planting in May.
Yeah.
So I manage that crew. That's only 500 volunteers and organizers. It's a tiny one. So, and then we have like a working bee in August, and my new title is citizenship manager. So we're trying to drive more people to become members of Woodfordia Inc. as a not-for-profit, you know, pay a small membership fee, get the quarterly journal and help contribute to the bigger picture. So we don't rely on the festival just to pay for all of our hopes and dreams, because we want to do some big things like renewable energy plant and stuff. So, you know, a scientific, you know, hospitality institute. We have some things we want to do that we can't pay for with the festival. The festival is struggling just to pay for itself. So, you know, so trying to drive a greater membership, and citizens are what we call them, citizens of Woodfordia. And so that's now part of my job, because I guess I like to manage people. So.
And you do a good job of it by the sounds of it.
Well, I have to take my hat off to the department heads, because they make me look good. They do it, you know, like they are amazing. They're well organized. I think it's really important that we do what we can to support them and to push them for excellent strive. Like we have a very high standard, and we don't apologize for that. Like, we expect a lot from our volunteers. It's not a come and do an easy thing and you get a ticket. It's like, no, you're going to work. It's a trade. And the same thing with our department heads. This is a lot of work. I, you know, when I'm screening department heads, I'm like, it could be 300 hours of volunteering from now until the festival. Like, you, the more you put into it, the more you're going to get out of it. But you got to commit, and you can't just do it all last minute and the night before. You're going to have a shit festival. And that's not going to be good. And we promise that to our people, that we're going to be organized as best we can. So each department head is empowered to be as organized as possible, get the best crew as possible, take care of them, have your rosters set up, do your training well, empower them. And then that you know, like I say to department heads, I'm like, you shouldn't have to work the whole time. You should be, by day four, you should be able to step back, and they should be running the show. And you're only there for problems. Like, aim for that. Aim for, you get your volunteers to a level where you aren't needed. You know, like, I aim for my department heads to be self-sufficient so that I can have a good festival.
So with your department heads, do you have a system during the year where you check in with them regularly on certain things, or are you really just having one briefing session with them and then you're pretty much letting them go and saying, come back to me if you need anything? Or do you have regular check-in?
I don't have a regular, like, I kind of see they're signing up for, you know, from the beginning of August or so. This year I didn't start sort of cracking the whip until mid-August, just because we had the working bee and tech stuff going on with a new database. I thought I'd wait for that to all settle, and then sort of gave them a shorter window of time to update their positions. Not sure that was a great idea, but there was actually, my hands were tied because I was, database, technology fun. So I kind of start then in August, and then they're technically done in January once they finish all their reporting. But I spent February chasing the stragglers that are, you know, just walked out of the festival and went, and are exhausted, and then, or pick up and go off to another festival. And so I chase and chase and chase to get everyone to do their evaluations. I can't send the volunteer thank you until they all do it. So I have, you know, I'm nagging people a lot. I jokingly call myself Karen McNag a lot. So, but That's just that brief, that window of time, August to January, February, you know, and then they probably don't hear from me unless they're also an organizer for the planting, and then they'll hear from me in February to say, okay, we're starting in March. And I sort of do the same kind of thing. Check your position descriptions, make sure they're accurate. We go live. We have a bit of time when it's just returning, which is a little bit easier, and they don't really have to screen much. They know the people. Yeah, cool, accept. And then they're screening more for the newbies, planning, logistics. And I have area managers. Like, I also have to take my hat off to all my coworkers that manage their department heads or support them. Like, for example, there's a front of house manager, and she oversees all the gates department heads and gets all their infrastructure in place and like works with them on their operations and also touches base and supports them in their volunteer management. So the department heads in the gates, like, you know, we have the drive-through gates, the gates, like all of those. If you look at front of house, it's sort of 9:30 o'clock on the wheel.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So you can see all the department heads that the front of house manager manages or supports. And so under her umbrella, there's a good 250 or 280 volunteers. And so I sort of trust her and ask her to keep checking in with her managers. But again, it's really only from August to January. The rest of the year, I don't do much with them. I know that they have other lives, and this is, you know, I don't want to, I'm conscious of information overload. And I try, in a year, in that period from August to January, I'll send 15 emails to them maybe, and they're less than 500 words each, but they also generally include an attachment to how to. So, you know, here's how to update your position descriptions if you've forgotten, because they do it once a year and then they forget. And there's a constant like training requirement, especially for new department heads. I'll sit with them for like an hour and a half, 2 hours to go through the software and train them up on it and the process and the timeline and all of the, what they are going to be expected to do in the next 4 months. So that they're well aware. Like, again, it's the same thing. As long as they know what they're getting into and they're still keen and they're still like, yeah, I totally want to do this, then we're good to go. But, you know, as soon as a department head's like, geez, or someone who wants to be a department head goes, oh, it's a lot of time, then I'm like, maybe you're not right for a department head yet. Like, you have to want to do it. You know, we see them as like, this is like their hobby. You have to want it, you know, like you like golf, you play golf every weekend. You're going to play Woodford every weekend from now until the festival. That's just part of it. So, and they love it, you know, for the most part. Some people just struggle because they're those kind of people that take on everything. So, and I have to chase, there's, you know, there's always that percentage. It's just like being a teacher. You don't have to worry about the top 20%. You spend all your time worrying about the bottom 20, and then there's that middle bit. There's, you know, I have the people that I constantly have to crack the whip to, and they're generally the ones that have been around a long time and kind of get a bit more slack because they know it'll all work out. You're like, yeah. No, but please read it because there's always changes.
Yeah. I like that you only have that period of what, August to January, so 6 months. So it's a intense allocated period of time. So they're not feeling like this is something that's consuming them all year. They know it kicks off in August. They wrap up January, February. Because I find that with a lot of volunteers is they just, you know, with other festivals and events, and I think this is one of the downfalls, is they feel like it becomes a burden on them year round, even though they're not doing a lot, it's still on their mind. You know, it's still there. And this whole idea of regular meetings, and that's another thing that these events do, is they're getting their volunteers.
They're going to have a meeting about having a meeting, or they're going to spend 20 hours to plan a meeting, and we don't have that time. And our department heads are all over the place. Like, we're internet based, and I have department heads in Melbourne. I've had them in the UK. I've had them all over the world. You know, I've trained people via Skype who are in Switzerland. It's been their midnight and my morning and whatever. Like, we're able to use technology to our advantage, and we have amazing people from around the world that know about us and come and get attracted to it. And so, but yeah, it's, we really like, we even as staff, like, we have the scheduled regular staff meeting, but the boss will say, like, there's no reason to have a meeting, we're going to cancel it. Like, we don't meet just for the sake of meeting. And I know with the festival back home that I came from, I struggled because I was going back and forth for 3 years, and I could start to see, like, that small town festival that I was from, they were creating more work for themselves than they needed to. You know, they were being very PC and consensus-based decision making, and we should have a subcommittee to decide whether or not we should do that. And they were disempowering themselves because they didn't let people just make a decision and go with it. You know, they did. Like, I ended up leaving because I love the festival and I don't want to hate it. But I was starting to hate it because it was like, this is so disempowering. I have to do a timesheet. I've been working here for 20 years and you need to know what I do on a daily basis. My boss in here, like, they just say, come to me if you need me and you're doing a great job, go. Like, I get the responsibility and, you know, to make those decisions myself. And they know that I will go to them if I think this is something I need your approval on first, you know. Mm. I'm developing a youth volunteer program and it's not something I would do without talking to the bosses and saying, are you cool with this? This is something I think we need to explore. I think it will be great for the future Woodfordians, the younger generation, the 13 to 15 year olds that are looking for something. I'm strongly passionate about youth volunteering. And I have, you know, I've just been given the go ahead. So we're making it, we're going to go for it this year.
So it's a whole philosophy, isn't it, for Woodford? It's just, you can see it comes from the top down. It's that whole, I love, you know, you've said a number of times, empowering, you know, empowerment, you know, giving people that authority to just do what they do. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges with a lot of events. You've said micromanaging before as well, you know, that whole thing of, just let people get on with the job and don't feel like you have to micromanage and manage everything. And that's what's happening with a lot of these festivals. And I think it comes down to a lack of, I guess, awareness and capability of how to run a festival. They're often just a community member. They jump in and they do their best, but they're just creating a lot more work for themselves.
Yeah, and I mean, there is, you know, lots of good points for the idea of having a board-driven festival, but I can't see very many anymore. This idea that a group of people is always going to be making all of the decisions, it doesn't, I think it slows it down. It's like trying to get 12 wheels to turn the same direction all at the same time and be in this, and without dynamics, like, break it down, let them go. You know, like that, like, we need this structure, this is what you need, you break. And that did come from Bill. Like, he had a vision and he was able to mobilize people and say, take this person and go, you do that for me, please, now. And you do that. And that's how he started it, you know. And the one I came from in Canada was lacking that one person. Like, I had a sort of small dream to be that person, but I couldn't break the culture of their board-driven festival and no one person makes any decisions by themselves. They make committees and, you know, involve people in the decision making, and therefore they can't change. They're not very dynamic because, you know, like, a decision that would happen at Woodford overnight would take a year at the one back home. You know, I think it was a turning point for me was we were struggling in our build period with volunteers or people showing up on site and getting fed free food because we feed our build crew volunteers. And not working, right? So we were like, what are we going to do to stop the bludgers? How do we stop the bludgers? We need a system. Systems generally stop things, you know, in their tracks. Like, if you create something where, so we, you know, our systems manager at the time was the Bill's sister, and she was very intelligent. She was actually the sort of the person who laid the foundation for the software. She's like, well, we have barcode font. We could make meal cards with barcodes, and we could scan them, and you only get your food once you scan. And it was like, that's brilliant. Sure. And this was the day before the build was to start. The setup was, they're arriving that next day. And it was like, okay, so what do we need to do? She's like, well, you export the list from Venus. I'll make the code and the script in the database. And this, because we were using FileMaker at the time. She built the thing, the code, the script, because she could do development. And then I gave her the information. She made it all work there. And then I spent all night making little meal cards, laminating 300 meal cards. And then the next morning they arrive and they get these cute little meal cards. And it's like, you got a meal card, you get fed. Don't lose your meal card. You can't use it more than once per meal. Make sure you eat 3 meals a day. We care about you and we want you to eat. And they were like, oh, wow, cool. And then right away they were also like, oh, that person doesn't have one. Get out, you know, like, they then self-managed and policed and got rid of the bludgers because it was like, well, I'm working, I get fed. You're not working, get out. And that it worked. Like, within, you know, a year, the culture shifted. And it's like, there's, you know, once a year, maybe once or twice, there's somebody that tries to scam some free food. And everybody knows, it's like, get out. You can't, it's not for you. It's nice that you're here, but you know, you haven't worked for this. And so we created a system and it was that dynamic. But I know that the festival back home, that would have been a subcommittee and it would have spent as much time talking about the issue as they would have spent talking about who should be on the committee and how, when should we meet? I started to pull my hair out there. I just want to get stuff done. And
It's, you know? As you're talking, I'm thinking, I had a conversation with Greg Donovan. He runs Big Red Bash at Birdsville. And that's he just, same kind of thing, independent run, private operation was his vision and dream. And that was the same kind of stuff that he said is just this ability to just make decisions, you know, what we can make a decision to, you know, spend thousands of dollars on Jimmy Barnes overnight, if that's what I think is going to be right for the festival. You know, whereas a lot of these other festivals, they are really bogged down by unnecessary governance, you know, like just layers and layers of it. And yeah, I love how you say the stuff, you know, about, you know, having a meeting to talk about what's going to be at the meeting. And that is seriously what happens. And this is why I think there's
it's like
culture.
A committee to decide who's going to be on the committee, a subcommittee to decide the members of it. It's like, oh my God. No. And then they complain about how much work it is for a 3-day festival. And I'm like, you make that work.
Yeah.
You are creating your own work. You're doing what governments do. It's bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And it's not efficient and we can't be inefficient, you know?
Yeah. Festivals are hard enough.
Yeah. You know, and every festival is the same thing. It's like putting on an event with this much money and you want it to be like that. Like, so everything has to be as efficient as possible. You know, my big thing is constantly asking department heads to reduce their volunteer numbers, like be as efficient as possible. Is there any way that you can reduce your numbers? You know, as opposed to there's some people that go, oh, the more volunteers we have, the better it is. And it's like, well, no, the more efficient you use your volunteers, the better it is. Like, I went to a really good workshop through Volunteering Queensland from a guy in the States who was, you know, talking revolutionary in a sense of that, like, your volunteers should be doing stuff that paid people are doing. You should treat them like paid people. Mm. And you can ask them to do stuff that you would ask a paid person to do. I mean, we have plant operators in our filtration plant. They're chemists. They're testing water to make sure it's potable. And they're volunteers. Like, it's a high-risk thing. Like, you know, if we make sure the water is safe on site. And those people are very skilled chemists and scientists, and they're volunteering their time for us. So we don't have a problem with asking someone to use a high level of skill to do a job as a volunteer. It's not, oh, we can't ask a volunteer to do that. We can't work them too hard. It's like, no, they're earning a ticket. They'll feel useful. I can't stand seeing volunteers sit around, walk into a place. I'm like, you're sitting around. Come with me.
I've got a job for you.
I can't stand seeing people sit around. It's like, no, you got to be busy.
I really hope you can eventually get to, you know, commercializing or turning that Venus software into a business. I seriously, like the number of events that I talk to, there'd be a massive demand out there. And just listening, you know, and listening to you, I think the ability just to help some of these other festivals and events to set up, you know, efficient volunteer management programs would make such a difference. It seriously is the number one challenge for a lot of these festivals and events, you know, and from small, you know, 2,000-3,000 people events up to, you know, 20,000-odd events, which is kind of the range of events that I work with. They're all struggling with this one thing. And when the first thing they say is nobody wants to volunteer. That's what they say. But when you really dig into that, it's not that nobody wants to volunteer. It's that you don't have a proper volunteer management program in place that actually embraces the opportunity for people to volunteer. And it's those same things like we've been talking about. It's volunteers don't want to come and sign up for something where they feel like they've got to sit in a meeting every month for the sake of it. Like, who wants to do that? You know, exactly. So it's this, I do think there's a big opportunity for you guys to do something if you ever get the time to do it.
yes.
The demand is there.
Well, I'm hoping that maybe I'll be rewarded with that further down the line and someone else will step into my shoes and I'll get to go and sell the Woodfortia software package.
Yeah, love it.
I think Bill is always the big dreamer that he is. He's like, it's not enough yet. We still need to have the project management aspect to it so we can sell the whole thing.
Yeah, okay.
You know, like, of course he wants to go big. That's how he is. You know, that's why he's such an inspiration. It's just like, it's not enough. Like, we can't just sell that. That volunteer management's only one aspect of the festival, you know. But we haven't even developed a proper project management software, and we've been looking for ours. I mean, that's an organizational challenge. Is we have all these departments that are empowered to run, but they have to share resources because we're not for profit. It's like we get three forklifts, and there's 10 or 11 different departments that want to use them. So, you know, scheduling the forklift driver. It would be nice to have a software system that would help us manage all that. We've looked, and every software, like project management software system, has its pluses and minuses. And
yeah,
we keep coming back to that. Like, we probably just have to develop something that works for us. But I mean, software development, I'm guessing we've probably spent more than $250,000 on the software that we have. The Venus software, like, as I said, it's been 13 years in development, 12 years, whatever. I can do math, 2018, 2005. I guess it started in 2004, so 14 years.
Yeah. I just love it. I love it. So just to wrap up, my final question, I haven't kind of gone through the questions in a logical order, but you've been touching on everything that I wanted to as we went through. So the one thing I wanted to just wrap up with is, what would be your top three volunteer management tips for regional events?
Well, I think, you know, going back to being really clear what they're being asked to do, and, you know, like, that they know what they're signing up for. So it's critical that you assess your needs and create good recruitment tools. Like, if you have to post, like, advertising for drivers, this is what it is. You know, advertising for parking management, or just being really clear what you're asking people to do, you know, so it takes thought about, like, what is this team going to do? What are their jobs? What are the hours of operation? How many do you need? So the clear volunteer assessment, and so that people will sign up because they know what they're getting into. Providing a lot of training and support so that they can succeed in the job. It's, you know, as much as it's easy to say, oh, it's not too hard to do dishwashing or something, washing the cups, but there is still going to be a system that they have to learn, and they have to be taught how to do it so that it's done right, and then they can feel good about it because they're not just like constantly making mistakes. So clear, good training, and that comes down to your volunteer leaders, your department heads, or whatever you call them. They plan ahead for that, and they think about a clear training plan. Like it's like having a curriculum, or, you know, if you're going to go into a classroom and be a teacher, you don't just walk in and make it up. You actually have your syllabus that you're going to follow and go through this, you know, start with the welcome, do something icebreaker. This is the job. These are the hours. These are the things you need to remember to bring with you when you come to your shift. And does anyone have any questions? Like, you know, it's not hard, but I think a lot of times people put that down low, and then you'll find volunteers not doing the job right. And then it causes more chaos, and that's not fun. The team leaders, they have to be really organized. And I can see, like, I go volunteer at other festivals, and, you know, it's not very inspiring or engaging or motivating for me when I see the manager is totally disorganized and not ready for you. You show up and they're like, can't wait. They're not ready for you. So, and then, like I said, the one thing that works at Woodford is that idea that make them love you. You're serving them. You're not, you know, that you want to make sure that they have a good time, that they're well supported, that they got what they need. You know, if they forgot their water bottle, maybe go get one out of Lost and Found and give it to them. Clean it, wash it. Here, I found your water bottle. Just whatever to make sure that volunteer treat them with respect as well. Like, we never say just a volunteer. Oh, just a volunteer can do that. Like, you know, that they're equal to paid people. It's flat. That's key, really. It's like, treat them with respect to make them love you, and they're going to love it. They get that empowerment. They're part of it. So
love it.
Probably more than 3 points there, kind of. But anyway,
thank you so much.
No problem. I hope that it helps, you know, like,
yeah. Look, I think it absolutely will. And, you know, a small, you know, case study like this is certainly inspiring for people. Yeah, I just keep, I know I keep banging on about it, but I just think Venus is amazing and would be such an asset. You know,
you should come to Woodford and I'll show it to you.
Yeah, I will. I'm going to take you up on that. I would love to understand it more. And yeah, I don't think I know. There's such a big need for it.
Yeah. I mean, you can do a lot with an Excel spreadsheet and a Google form at these days, Google Sheets. Like, I know, like for a smaller event, if you're managing 200 people, you could still get away with something like that, as long as you have that framework of like breaking it down into jobs, making clear position descriptions, making a way for people to apply, making a way for them to tell you what skills they have so that you can screen them, and then making it a good fit. That doesn't need Venus software. This is, we have it because of the volume. You know, we get 6,000 applications, we take 3,000. Like, so we've had to do it, just this, the complexity of the organization. But a smaller event, you know, with maybe 10 different teams and 200 volunteers, it certainly could work. Mm. I'd also like to say, don't have too big a team. You know, like, you know, when you get over sort of maybe 40 people in a crew, it's really hard for a person to manage that well. You know,
how many on average do your department heads have?
Around 20, I'd say. 20, 25 would be the average. Mm. You know, like there's teams that are just as small as two. You know, we have an odorology department that goes around and makes sure the bins don't smell too bad and disinfects the smelly ones. So that's just like the manager and two people that walk around and follow the bin crew in the morning and then clean them once they're emptied. But then, you know, we do have like a team, like stage management, for example, is 155 in stage management, but we have a dedicated like contract, like person who is the stage management coordinator. They're paid, they come on board, they do a 5-week contract to oversee that. And that's all they do is work on that roster and put people into stages as stage managers and ASMs. There's a flying squad, there's a venue crew, there's, you know, so that one is quite complex. But that's because we need this a system across the board, across all our stages, that is the same. We couldn't break it down and say, you run your stage that way and you run your stage that way, because we have to have them similar. So there's certain things that are like, you know, but once they're on the ground, you know, you've got the grand or the tropic team that has a venue manager, stage manager for every shift and three ASMs, and that works. You know, and they run during the festival as a team like that, but the planning of it is bigger, more involved. And there's like the fire event that has 150 people in it, the production of the closing ceremony, and they have a dedicated volunteer coordinator like me, but just does the fire event volunteers. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as soon as it gets over 40, you've got to break it down. Yeah. We've got the RFID people. We used to have bar cashiers, and there was 80 in one team. And so then we broke it down into zones. So we've got the west zone, the north zone, the south zone. And so then it was four teams of 20 as opposed to one team of 80.
Yeah, yeah.
One person overseeing it, making sure that all four teams are working similarly and following the same system. So that works better. You don't want to get too big a crew. It's too hard.
Yeah.
People management's hard enough.
I reckon. Amazing. I'm listening going, wow, like it's just, yeah, to manage, you know, 5 or 10 volunteers is hard enough. You know, when you get that big crew, it's just, you know, for me, I listen and I go, it's structure, it's systems, it's, you know, all of that stuff, which is so important. And like you said before, if there's a challenge, you put a system in place and that usually, you know, overcomes that. So, I love it.
So try and, you know, if people start to say, we should have a meeting about that, or like, really? Let's just make a decision. Try to limit the amount of like group planning. That's not efficient.
Yeah. Anyway. Thank you so much for your time, Karen.
No problem, Linda.
I'll be in touch.
And let me know when you come to the festival.
I will. I absolutely will. Wow. What another inspiring case study from Karen at Woodfordia. Thank you so much for everything that you've given, Karen, certainly going above and beyond and sharing a load of great advice and tips there for regional events across all parts of Australia and the world. for me, I think the key learnings there were having a structure, and that circle model that you were kind enough to share with us is absolutely mind-blowing. And I think there's some fantastic learnings in the style of that organisational structure, and also just the need to have a good structure in place, no matter how big or small your event is. Another takeaway for me and a key learning from that was empowerment and gratitude. I think there are two things that every event needs to take away from that particular case study. The ability to remove the need to micromanage, to have a more empowerment ethos, and gratitude being an absolute priority, I think is critical in terms of retaining our volunteers, but also in recruiting new volunteers. Having clear, very, very clear position descriptions so that people know what they're getting into. Cannot agree more with that, Karen. Thank you so much for reinforcing that. Once again, systems and processes, and making sure that everybody understands expectations and how to actually deliver on those expectations, and giving them the framework and the systems and processes to be able to do that. So make their job easier. And I guess the final key takeaway for me within that case study was the need to reduce the number of volunteers, but make those volunteers that you have more efficient. So let's get away from the thought that we need more volunteers, and let's focus on making our existing volunteers more efficient. There were plenty more takeaways within that case study. Thanks again for your generous contribution, Karen, and I can't wait to visit you at Wood Fordia very soon.